And now, the tradition continues as WABC presents John Gambling with the mayor of the greatest city in the world, Mike Bloomberg.
The greatest city in the world, absolutely spectacularly beautiful today with the blue skies, the warm temperatures. You've done it again.
And I'll take full credit.
Good
absolutely.
For you.
Good morning.
Good morning. How are you today?
I'm okay for an old guy, you know. I looked outside as I was walking from City Hall over to the subway thinking, yeah, this would be a nice day to be on a golf course. You and I could be there rather than... here's an idea.
Rather than the alternative.
You and I can walk with radio phones on our heads, playing golf, talking to each other, and taking some calls from our listeners. And
Frank, get it done. Set it up.
Absolutely.
Stu, set it up. We'll do the show from a golf course.
Why would the listeners not want us to be happy, too? Most of them are probably outside right now listening on portable radios.
I can probably give you 100 reasons why the listeners probably don't want you and me doing that. Speaking of good things, I think good things, you are in a group of 100 in Time magazine this week. In fact, on the cover.
Nice.
Movers and shakers.
I haven't talked to my mother yet this morning, but I will mention it to her, and I'm sure she'll... She subscribes, so she'll go.
Your reaction that the President of the United States is not on that list, that you have supplanted him, at least according to Time magazine.
Well, look, number one, it's a subjective thing. Number two, I'm flattered. And there's an awful lot of influential people around the world that aren't on the list. They have to pick a handful of, from column A, column B, from everything. So they have it's a sample. I think the important thing is that mayors around this country are having a lot more say, and I'm just happen to be a symbol at the moment for all of them. But, you know, Shirley Franklin in Atlanta and Diaz in Miami and Menino in Boston and Daley in Chicago and Billy Garosa. I mean, there's a lot of young ones, Cory Booker and Adrian Fenty.
I was talking to somebody about Fente the other day who lives in Washington, and they're impressed with him.
Yeah,
so far.
I mean, I think what you see here is that Washington is so paralyzed because of partisanship, they don't focus on the real-world problems that mayors have to face. They spend their time discussing flag burning and, Terry Schiavo, a terrible case, and they wring their hands and rush to do press conferences for after Virginia Tech. But there are 30-odd people murdered every day in this country by guns, and nobody wants to focus on that. But mayors do. Mayors, I have done in 6 years now eulogies for 8 police officers killed in the line of duty. I don't want to do a ninth in the next 973 days that I have left. And mayors don't have the luxury of talking about solutions in the year 2050, which there's a whole group. I'm going to give a talk on energy next weekend. But people are focusing on, well, we're going to end pollution by the year 2050. You know how far away 2050 is? It's roughly 44 years from now, 43 years from now. And most of the people in Congress aren't going to be alive. You and I probably won't be alive. Or you will be, but I won't be. But they can't do a small amount in the next year. They can only do everything 50 years from now.
And we know the reason. Because they don't have to take any responsibility.
Yeah, but mayors can. And I think it would get back to the Time magazine. This is not a popularity thing. They didn't say these people, including myself, alike. As a matter of fact, I noticed I was on a list, an alphabetical list. Osama bin Laden was just above me. Raul Castro was just below me.
That's an interesting sandwich.
Somebody
isn't
says
it?
You're known by the company you keep. Well, it's just a list. But mayors have to face these issues every day. They get up in the morning and they've got to worry about the crime and education and sanitation and parks and cultural institutions and housing and jobs. And those are the kinds of things that Washington, I think, has walked away from focusing on because they're so partisan and they're so afraid of the public. You know, I had the president of Ireland, the reason I was a touch late, was I had the president of Ireland in my office a little while ago this morning. She's here for a visit.
Actually, I think she's visiting out on Long Island, if I'm not
mistaken. Was before. But Mary McAleese is a really smart woman. I was sitting around the table talking, and one of the subjects came up is the public is way ahead of the press and the elected officials. And that's not just true here. She was using that as an example in Ireland, where the public wanted a solution to the problems, as they call them, the Northern Ireland, Republic of Ireland problems, the Catholic-Protestant fighting that's gone on for generations, public said enough is enough. And the elected officials were always behind. They were unwilling to stand up and try to move things along. They would say, oh, we did. But in the end, there's a lot of these problems that are the third rail of politics, and I think you see that in Washington all the time. They're all afraid to tackle them. They nuance their ways around them. They're for the war, but not to fund it. It's that kind of being on both sides of the issues. Mayors can't do that, and I'm on that list for only one reason, that mayors have started to focus on this. And then there are governors. You know, Eliot Spitzer is just in office, so it's too early to see, but I think he will focus on some real issues and try to get things done. Schwarzenegger is being held up by everybody, I think rightly so, as a governor who's really tried to tackle the nuts and bolts problems that we have to deal with every day.
And if you go down that list, you see Steve Levy in Suffolk. You see the mayor of Hazleton, Pennsylvania, on the immigration issue, whether you agree with their stance.
Right.
But again, dealing with, obviously, the issue that affects the people of their
town. That's correct.
Town.
And
county.
Unfortunately, whether it's the administration or Congress, they just don't seem to be able to do it. And it's a big frustration. Everybody says it's ripe for a third party candidate. I don't happen to think so. But the frustration with Washington is clearly there. And the public doesn't want to listen to another of these.
Public's fed up with it. Fed up with it. I think.
Yeah, whether or not that'll translate at the polls. You know, we all, people hate the post office, but they like their postman. It's that kind of thing. In the end, I suspect every time there's an election coming up, we're fed up and we're not going to take it anymore. That movie was made a long time ago. Wasn't any different then.
And we're still screaming out the window. We're
not
gonna
my mother always is fond of saying the good old days were never the good old days. And these problems just go on and on. But clearly today, perhaps tomorrow, and certainly I think yesterday as well, the public says, let's approach the real issues and not worry about all of these things that occupy so much time, the press conferences. And then you look at I didn't see the debate last night. I didn't see the Democratic debate. I had dinner with some people, and I've never been a political guy, so I don't really spend a lot of time looking at it. But the questions you get in a debate are designed to make you look good or bad. It's a measure of whether you're glib, not whether you can do something.
And you've got 30 seconds to answer it in. So, I mean, answer isn't going to get anybody anywhere other than that soundbite.
I would, take a look and say, look at it this way. If you were hiring somebody to run your company, would you give them a 30-second snap quiz on things that have nothing to do with the job they're going to take? No, you'd focus on experience and what their ideas are in the future. And when they say, well, I can fix this, you say, okay, how? And who's going to bear the cost? Because there's a downside. You know, difficult problems, if they were easy, they'd be solved. So the problems that go on and on are difficult. There's pain involved and cost involved in solving them. And nobody's willing to stand up.
And yet, when it comes to cost, most of those politicians, we need to go to a break here, but most of those politicians will be happy to throw money at an issue as fast as they can get to the bank, the federal bank, and throw money at problems.
But they don't want to raise the taxes to pay for them.
Correct.
So they're throwing money that they can print.
And that's exactly why we are in the state we are in. Mr. Mayor, sit where you are, please, and we will get back to you in just a moment. We continue here at 77 WABC.
77 WABC.
We continue here with Mayor Michael Bloomberg. Went a little long in our first segment. This one will be shorter, but we've got it full of good stuff here. You have been on a redevelopment tear, and now the latest suggestion is the Willets Point area. Out past Shea and Queens.
Willets Point is, if you think of Shea Stadium, it is to the north, directly north of Shea Stadium. It's basically a triangular area. It has 250 small businesses, chop shops, and a variety of outdoor low-margin businesses, which we need in the city and have to be someplace. Somebody told me there's only one person that actually lives in it. I don't know if that's
true. In Willets Point?
Yeah, I think there's no residential whatsoever.
I didn't know
that. Or virtually none. and it's an enormous, has enormous potential for the city.
College Point, right next to it, has already started to develop about 10 years ago.
Absolutely. And, you know, you're close to the 7 Line. You got great views of the city. There's an enormous market for anything there. So building housing and offices and stores and it will be an enormous boom.
What about LaGuardia? Because LaGuardia sits right between Shea, right between Willets Point.
Right.
I mean, is that a concern? I was on the train this morning coming across and watching the planes come in over Flushing, and I'm just wondering, how long can we continue to do this before there's some incident?
Planes are safe and getting safer all the time.
I don't think you're concerned or anybody?
Listen, if you're going to have planes come towards an airport and you live near the airport, I don't think there's no appreciable extra risk. There is some noise, but planes get quieter with time. Yeah. The Stage 3 engines are clearly a lot quieter than the older ones. And most of the approaches, a bunch of them are over water.
Right.
But I don't think that's an issue. Lightning is something to worry about a lot more than anything like that. Aircraft in this country are very safe.
This redevelopment area, what part does the city play in it? Zoning?
Well, it's zoning. The biggest problem is all of this area is horrendous from a environmental point of view. The city used to burn an enormous amount of garbage. They dumped chemicals and petroleum there. The dirt is as polluted, and it's leaking into the water. So it isn't like you just leave it there. So the first thing you'd have to do is clear it all, and the remediation means digging up an enormous amount of dirt, and you take it away and replacing that. Then you could build on it. And actually, we would build about 5 feet higher. We'd raise the actual ground another 5 feet because you're in a floodplain. And you don't want to have to, you know, deal with floods all the time.
And what is the starting point here? What is the what pulls the trigger to get a project like this started?
We're starting the process now. There's a city council, there are community boards. There's invariably be lawsuits. You'll have to deal with that. Buying out people. Hopefully, you would never have to use eminent domain. Although it's as good an example of where you really can't leave the city back, you know, centuries ago. You got to have progress. We've got to build for the next million people that are coming to this city, and you can't take that next million people and put them in existing residential neighborhoods. The density would be too great. You change the character of the neighborhoods, and people don't want to have their infrastructure overstressed. So finding areas for new building that aren't residential is a real challenge. This happens to be one of the great ones, and this will... You know, sort of using Shea Stadium in theory as an anchor tenant, if you will. But even without a new Shea Stadium, this is a project that should get going, and I think we'll get going.
Speaking of development, your position on Pier 40 being changed over to commercial.
Well, I think you should look at all these things. A lot of obviously people in the community say traffic, and they want to use it for other things. If the plan includes athletic facilities and things, parks and things that the current pier has and that the community likes, then I think that's a big plus for it. The city needs, they talked about a place for Cirque du Soleil there. That's a great tourist attraction, for not just for tourists but for New Yorkers as well. So I think it's one of those things you got to look at.
All right.
And remember, this is a fantastic park up the whole west side.
You can't get that real estate anywhere else.
That is true.
You mentioned this. I remember it's probably 6 months. Maybe
I take exception to that. We have 528 miles of. Come on, I just forgot my facts here. 528 something like that miles of waterfront.
Of equally good.
So you do have. Well, we're going to build a great park on the east side, and there are parks in Brooklyn and up in the Bronx and on Staten Island and in Queens. Thank you. You can go on.
Yeah. Well, did you see that it was. Brooklyn is considered the most paved over area in America?
When I first came to New York in 1966, I think it was the Brooklyn Savings Bank, but some savings bank ran an ad in the paper that at that point in time, this was back in the 60s, one out of every 7 people ever born in America was born in Brooklyn. Now, today, that's no longer true. Brooklyn, if it was a separate city, which Marty Markowitz, the great borough president, Brooklyn would like to have. Absolutely, Marty and I joke about it all the time. It's a very concentrated, dense area. It is arguably the borough that has benefited the most in the last 5 or 10 years from reduced crime and better schools. You know, places in Brooklyn that you never heard of, and now everybody talks about, or places you would never think about living or going. Today, stores are moving in, people are moving in, schools are getting better. You know, it's fascinating what's happening in Brooklyn.
Yeah, and the neighborhoods are changing very rapidly.
Yeah, there's still a couple of precincts where there's very high crime, and we've got to focus on that. And the rest of the borough really is very safe and clean and fun.
All right, building codes. It was about 6 months, maybe a year ago, that you and I talked about that you were looking at building codes.
In 2001, when I ran, one of my campaign promises was to revise the building code. Here it is 6 years later, and it isn't like we weren't working on it for a very big chunk of that time. They estimate something like 300,000 hours went into coming up with a new building code. Every interest group is included, all the different construction unions, different types of building owners, residential tenants and commercial tenants, and it's really quite something. It will make costs of constructing in this city a lot less. It will make buildings safer. The fire department's ecstatic about it because it requires sprinklers in a lot more buildings. It takes into account the lessons learned from 9/11. A lot of the stairways are a lot wider and better constructed, stronger, and that sort of thing. And I think we're at a point where hopefully the city council will pass it. Everybody's going to... this is New York, so I don't want to overstate it. You'll always find somebody that's not happy, but basically, this is a very good thing for the city. The last time the city redid its building code was in 1968, and the special interests always sent it in the direction of we're different to protect their little fiefdoms. This is much more consistent with national building standards, so a construction worker can come from one location into the city and know exactly how to work and what's right and what's wrong. You can buy in bulk. You can buy from national suppliers some of your stuff for construction. It's a win-win-win.
You mean the old codes required people to buy from New York City?
Well, no, but we had something different, so chances
are... It was a different dimension.
A different standard. Yep. You know, everybody else, we bought them in blue. We had a requirement in yellow. You don't get any economies of scale when we're the only one, so it costs more, but also most manufacturers didn't bother to make the yellow one. So.
All right, Mr. Mayor, stick around. We've got another break here on the half hour, and that... WABC. Here we go. Mayor Michael Bloomberg with John Gambling and you at 77 WABC. Friday get together. 1-800-848-WABC is our telephone number. We'll take some questions from you. You'll have the question. The mayor will have the answer coming up in just a little bit. 1-800-848-WABC. Your idea of congestion pricing has met with, all across the board from A to Z.
Yeah, conventional wisdom was it would be something universally hated by everybody, and I think it's not fair to say that it's universally accepted by everybody, but I don't think anybody predicted how much support it has gotten so far.
What about the threat from New Jersey's legislature that if it's put in, they're going to put something in for people going the other way?
That's not a threat. They want to do that anyways because they've got congestion. You know, you listen to the radio in the morning, and there's a 45-minute wait at the GW Bridge or the Holland Tunnel,
Lincoln
Tunnel. The cars are sitting there belching smoke into the air that the people in New Jersey are breathing, and they're spending 45 minutes just trying to get to the tunnel. You know how long their commute is? That's worth an awful lot of money. If you could do something, the whole idea of congestion pricing is to get people to use mass transit, be more efficient in terms of how many people they take with them and when they go, and to generate the monies to build mass transit. New Jersey's got an enormous problem. People that live in New Jersey who work in New York spend, let's assume you spend 45 minutes just waiting at the tunnel each day. That's an hour and a half just the wait. Has nothing to do with driving through the tunnel and getting to and from the tunnel. So, and it's going to do nothing but get worse unless you do something.
Do you envision a New York City where the car truly becomes a secondary or tertiary item?
No, I don't think that there's any evidence that we will give up cars and trucks and just use mass transit. But in Stockholm and in London, they've shown that you can get more people to use mass transit. And when you do, everybody benefits. Those that use mass transit get better mass transit because there's money to improve it and extend it. And those that drive have to compete with a lot less traffic. And if you could make the commute into New York City 45 minutes shorter coming and going, how much would people pay for an hour and a half extra time? And incidentally, the offset of the $8 charge by the tolls makes it almost cost-free. You said to somebody, let's assign the tolls for $5. Let's say it's $5. So it costs you $3 to save an hour and a half. How many people wouldn't do that?
A couple.
And what's more, you want your kids to breathe this air? You want to breathe? You know, asthma rates in...
Well, Staten Island, smoggiest in the boroughs.
Yeah, I mean, people from Staten Island, the only ways you can drive from Staten Island into Manhattan is to pay tolls. And if you offset those tolls against the congestion pricing, Staten Island people would be enormous winners.
All right. You have suggested that the money from the congestion pricing and any other scheme like that, the money's dedicated, earmarked for mass transportation. We've heard that before about lotteries, this, that, and the other thing. And the legislatures have a habit of taking those monies, putting it into mass transit, but then reducing the amount of money that comes from all the mainstream.
John, would you think they would do that?
Yes. In fact, they're already doing, you know, they're already...
Put me down on the shock category. Shocked.
But, I mean, that's why...
Okay, but that's what the look. The public has to hold their elected officials accountable. I mean, I joked yesterday at the press conference where we presented the new building code, and I said we've been working on this since I promised it no one. And I joked now there's one more thing on the scorecard or our report card that we can say we did. And I'm determined before I leave to get. You know, you'll never get 100% done, but you get virtually all of them done. And I think the public should hold us responsible. I've always been annoyed, and the press really is the one that has to do it because they're the one that can gather the data and has the resources to do it. But when people sit there and say, I'm going to do this if elected, number one, we should be asking how they're going to do it and who's going to pay for it. Nobody ever does, and they never say. And number two, once they get in, hold them accountable, and you can't let them say, oh, well, we're getting to that. It's like this business of energy independence by 2050, but we can't cut emissions by 10% in the next 2 years.
Well, you saw that the Bush administration is suggesting offshore drilling for oil on the coast and also in Alaska, and the Democrats came out instantly and said, we're not going to allow that to happen, yet everybody talks about energy independence. It can't happen. You can't have it both ways.
Well, we have to find ways to generate energy in this country. There is drilling for oil. There is coal, although there's some real questions about how safe you can make coal. Although the coal manufacturing industry
says they can do it.
There's biofuels. The corn farmers are very happy this year. You know, they're selling a lot of corn. There's wind, there's, you know, hydro, there's natural gas driving fuel cells. There's some technology down the road. There is reducing consumption. We raised the average miles per gallon for cars in this country dramatically from something like 12 miles a gallon to 24 miles a gallon over about 10 years. It was a law that required Detroit and other companies to do it. The law expired in 85, and we haven't done anything since 1985. That's 20-odd years.
Everybody talks about it. Nobody does anything.
Well.
And you can't divorce us from oil instantaneously. And if there's an issue, then we're getting off subject here. If there's an issue in the Middle East, we're going to be caught with our pants down, so to speak.
I don't know that I want to be associated with that because it'll be right on the front page of the newspaper.
That was my comment. Yes, those of you that are listening, my word, not the mayor's. A couple of city council people, four to be exact, water rate hike, just another tax. Just another tax.
Well, it's
tax.
Number one, it's not a tax. It's a fee, which is worse because it's not deductible. So, I mean, they don't understand that. We need water and sewerage facilities, and we have federal laws to comply with. And so we're trying to buy land around reservoirs upstate so that they don't get developed, so our water stays clean and we don't have to filter it, which would be very expensive. People aren't happy when the sewers overflow and we keep dumping sewage into the into the rivers when there's a big rainstorm. We have to finish the third water tunnel. I mean, I love these guys. They're, it's an outrage. Number one of the reasons water rates are so high is the city council won't pass a law letting us cut off water if you don't pay your bill. Now, people pay, something like 98% of the people pay their property taxes. Why? Because if you don't pay your property taxes, we seize the property. Only 80-odd percent, 88 or something like that, pay their water bill. Why? Because there's no penalty. We're afraid to do it. Oh, we can't do that. The tenant didn't know it was a landlord. Or, oh, the bills aren't correct. Maybe the bills aren't correct, but in the case of property taxes, the bills aren't correct. You pay, and then you go down and fight. Here, you fight first, or we don't do anything, so why even bother to fight? So the first thing they could do is to give the city the ability to sell liens on properties to outsiders who would enforce the it's just not fair. You pay your water rates, I pay mine, Joe doesn't pay his, and we feel sorry for Joe. Somehow or other, I missed something there. But in terms of what we get for our monies, you know, Department of Environmental Protection's pretty good agency, efficient, needs to keep making investments and fixing and building, and we need those things, and somebody's got to pay.
You always talk about long-term solutions that really never get to the problem and never gets done. There's a survey, as I understand, being taken in the school system of parent of various constituencies.
Parents, teachers, and students.
Yeah, right. Okay. Over 3 years. Why 3 years?
It's they do bad. I don't know where you get through it. Three years.
It said it's been going on for 3 years, or will total 3 years. According to one of the stories.
I don't know what the story is talking about. Okay. I can tell you this. They're due back. We've mailed to every parent. We give out in every school, and we also
So it's a one-time survey. I mean, this is not something.
No, we said we'd do it again next year.
Okay, so you're going to do it for 3 years.
That may very well be. I don't know what the story was. I think they're due back in not next Thursday, but a week from Thursday. Look in your mail for a green envelope. The teachers, we give them out in the schools. Teachers mm-hmm. will fill those out. The students, we give them out in schools. Parents, we put them in their kids' backpack and mail, some combination thereof. And we're just trying to get as much information from as many people. In the end, it's still going to be the principals and the teachers that make the decisions. But to give them the information on what people think really will let them do their job an awful lot better. And you can say, you know, well, the kids just say, oh, I want more vacation and, you know, different kind of
snow days
and, you know, more French fries and mayo in the cafeteria. Okay, I mean, there's a little bit of that. But, you know, sometimes every once in a while, a kid's going to say, I never thought of that. That's really interesting. You know, out of the mouths of babes is the old expression. And you got to ask everybody.
All right, middle schools the success rate, the middle schools, the rates of success on English and math seem to drop with each grade up.
Well, middle schools are particularly are a big problem because it's when the kids start going from being
little kids to
being adolescents where they're, you know, the hormones are going crazy. They got lots of other things on their minds. It's a tough period you and I didn't have a tough period, but everybody else when they went through that period had a tough period. And I think that the most encouraging thing last week or the week before, the state put out the graduation rates for New York City schools. They went down in all the other big cities in the state. And they went up dramatically here, and they've been up, each year they've been going up, and I don't know, in the last 5 years, 25% more kids graduate, some number like that, each year now. Do we have a long ways to go? Absolutely. And everybody starts arguing about, do you include, if they have to go to summer school to graduate instead of just in 4 years, is that good or bad? Should you include it, or did you fail? 5-year graduation rates. I'd look at the 6-year graduation rates. 7 years starts to tail off. That's the most impressive thing to me because the kids that are good students will graduate in 4 years. Our problem is what do you do with a kid who's not a good student? How do you keep him interested or her interested and staying in school and working? And what an accomplishment for somebody who's just inherently not a good student to make their ways through, get the education they need. And we should be proud of the graduation rates in 5 and 6 years instead for political purposes. Some people say, oh, you didn't graduate in 4 years. Look, you can't have higher standards and insist on everybody graduating in 4 years. And what do you do if somebody doesn't graduate in 4 years? Throw them away and say, the hell with them, we're not going to do anything? I don't think so. I think those are the people that really need our help and that we should really focus on. And the graduation, the 5 and 6 year graduation rates are even better news than the 4 year graduation rate, which is great.
All right, Mr. Mayor, the questions will come from the audience. 1-800-848-WABC. Those will come right after this break. WABC. All right, it's your turn with Mayor Michael Bloomberg. We're going to start with line number 6. That's Perry in Jersey City. Perry, go. You got the mayor.
Yeah, I'm in the Holland Tunnel now. I wanted to ask Michael Bloomberg, what is the effect going to be on contractor vehicles and couriers that come into the city? Also, I want to ask him, what can he do to alleviate interaction between cars and pedestrians at certain key.
Okay. All right, Bear, thanks.
Perry, number one, the commercial side really is a big winner because it just takes you so long to make a delivery to get where you're going to go. Anything that reduces traffic, given the cost of paying for the driver, paying for the truck, getting you where you want to go.
Gasoline costs,
sure. I mean, you know, and you offset the tolls against what they pay. It's been a very big deal in London. Businesses that were worried about it would hurt their business, it actually helped because deliveries could get there a lot quicker. So in theory, they can negotiate lower prices, but also the customers can get there. I mean, if the traffic is so bad, you're not going to go into the city in the central business district to shop. You'll shop more locally, and given the costs in New York City of, you know, it's a higher ticket item you typically buy in the city, the cost of the toll of the congestion charge offset by the toll would not be a very big deal. In terms of at the corners, we need Albany to give us more red light cameras. People are getting killed all the time by people running red lights. Why Albany wouldn't? And when you just shake your head and you say, how can this be?
All right. Thanks, Perry. Let's go to Al here in New York City. Al, you've got the mayor. Go.
Good morning, Mayor. It's actually Tal, T-A-L.
Sorry, Tal. Go ahead.
I'm an Israeli-American mayor, and first thing I want to do is just let you know that it's wonderful having a mayor that's consistently supported in so many ways that I'm sure the public doesn't even know the state of Israel.
Tal, we're running out of time. Get to your question, please.
Mayor, let me ask you, would you support a New York City protest against the war?
My job would be to make sure that if you get the right permit, which we would issue, putting it in a place where we don't take away the rights of others. New York City is a city where people should be able to speak their minds. And if you want to protest against the war or protest for the war, I've always thought that freedom is exactly that. Everybody that wants to say something has a right to say it. What we have to do is to make sure that the protests are where we can provide protection for people in the protest and people on the side of the protest. We have to make sure that it doesn't disrupt traffic every place or, you know, there's restrictions in parks because you don't want to tear up the lawn. But we have an obligation in the city to make sure that people can protest. And you saw a great example of it back in the when the Republican convention was here in Boston. You couldn't get within, you know, many blocks of the place where the convention was going to take place.
Chained off. Yeah.
Right. We had a protest, 100,000 people march right by the garden. We actually do accommodate. And there are always people who want to make a fuss and cause commotions, and you have to deal with that as well.
All right. Well, unfortunately, our time is up once again. Next Friday, I will be off. My son William is graduating, so we'll
Mazel
see you.
Congratulations. Well, on behalf of all 8.3 million people in the city, they want to be sure to congratulate your son.
Thank you. I will tell him that the mayor in New York City congratulates him as well. Have a good week. We'll see you in a couple. Stick around.